This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 86.
I'm seeing a lot of companies say, hey, we're going to eliminate the DEI person, but we're going to give all the work to ERGs, employee resource groups. Employee resource groups do not equal DEI. They're a component of it, but that's not what this is. So you see a lot of companies making those decisions because they want to keep something, but not really understanding what diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, whatever you want to call it, it's all the same. Whatever that is, they don't fully understand that it is promoting equity at all costs, but also dismantling systems that actually have created inequity. And I think that you need someone who has been in the space that understands all components of HR systems, that has a voice, that understands business strategy, that understands decision making, so that decisions that are being made are in favor of all people and all communities and not just one over the other.
What is the current state of diversity, equity, inclusion in our organizations? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. In today's episode, we'll be talking about the current state of diversity, equity, and inclusion in 2024 and beyond. And because of the recent pushback, it feels like DEI has lost some momentum, which is why I wanted to bring in some data on the subject. Research by the Institute for Corporate Productivity, also known as I4CP, in the Resetting DEI report asked, has your organization made progress in the last 18 months towards its stated DEI goals? 60% of the participating organizations said they had made progress, which is positive, while only 9% said they had not made any progress, and surprisingly, 24% had not established any DEI goals at all, which does seem like a big opportunity to me. But my takeaway from this research is that a majority of organizations continue to be focused on making positive progress despite the recent pushback that we've all been seeing. But obviously, there's a lot to discuss in this space, which is why I'm excited to have Libra Clemens join us today. Libra is a seasoned C-suite executive in HR, talent, culture, and DEI with experience across Fortune 500 companies. She's held key HR, talent, and DEI roles at Twilio, PayPal, Morgan Stanley, and American Express. She has deep expertise in driving people strategy, developing and retaining talent, and evolving organizational culture. Libra also serves on the board of trustees for the American Folk Art Museum in New York, and most recently was honored as a Transform 10 for being one of the most influential executive leaders leading transformation in HR today. Libra's also featured in the award-winning documentary On Board about the evolution of board diversity through the eyes of executive women in global corporate spaces. I know they're going to get a lot out of our conversation with Libra as we discuss why she believes you should be constantly and continually growing as a professional and in your career, the evolving role of the chief people officer, and why many chief diversity officers are transitioning to that position. Her perspectives on the current state of diversity, equity, and inclusion in 2024 and beyond, why investing in talent and developing leaders will be crucial for organizations in the next 5 years, and how shifts in workplace expectations are redefining how people view work, their purpose, and how they think about work-life balance, and much, much more. Libra, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I am good.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling good. I'm excited to talk with you today about a few different things. You've had this incredible career and you've got such an interesting perspective that I know you're going to share today about how this chief people officer role is changing, how you're seeing that transitioning, where the market's going. So I'm excited to talk to you about that. But first, I want to get into your career a little bit. And looking back at your career, you've worked at like American Express, Brunswick Group, Morgan Stanley. You've worked in DEI, talent management, corporate communications. How did all these experiences shape you as a leader?
Yeah, it does sound like, wow, what'd you do here? What'd you do there? So I will say that American Express was my first corporate job. I had had a career in nonprofit work. I worked in Washington, D.C. on a political campaign. By the time I moved over to American Express, it was just fairly new to me to understand how to navigate corporate life. I took a role in DEI, and actually my boss at the time, who ran diversity, still a mentor today, one of the things that she told me, and I know we're going to get to a little bit later in the conversation, to really reposition and constantly evolve who I am and what I'm doing. So when I joined American Express, one of my first corporate jobs, I was a director of diversity. And what a lot of people don't know, especially early 2000s, diversity at companies like American Express and Morgan Stanley, where I worked, were really, really focused on talent management. So the heads of diversity reported into the head of talent. So everything that you did was talent driven, everything. And that is my sweet spot. This was before there were ERGs for sure, but there weren't a lot of panel discussions. There weren't big DEI conferences. There wasn't a lot of unconscious bias training. It was really, how are you driving diversity through talent management, whether it's learning and development, performance management, all of that targeted at various demographics. That's what it was. My boss at the time said to me, Libra, this is a great field, but you need to fully understand that this may or may not be a career for you. So what do you want to do after this? Do you want to go into philanthropy? Because that was also a big thing then, where there was tons of philanthropy, corporate philanthropy roles. A lot of people from diversity went to philanthropy and philanthropy came to diversity. Do you want to transition into marketing? Do you want to continue down the talent path, or do you want to become a head of HR? That was probably the first time that I thought about what was next for me. And that really helped me to build and shape my career beyond just, I'm going to be a chief diversity officer, but also tapping into those other skills to help me to transition into other roles. So that really started my corporate career, but also helped me to really understand that there's more to this. Let's evolve beyond DEI. Oddly enough, shortly after that conversation, she left American Express as the head of diversity and became chief HR officer for Bloomberg, but continued that HR path. So I continued to follow in her footsteps. But those were Morgan Stanley and American Express, very, very strong companies that were focused on talent. And that to me, as I said, was really the basis for everything that I had done around diversity. Brunswick Group was one of those wild card roles, which I love, because this was shortly after the crash of the market. And this was 2008, and living and working in New York and financial services, a lot of HR and DEI roles, because there were some in the early 2000s that people don't know about. DEI had been around for a while. DEI and a lot of HR roles were the first to go. I took a step back and was like, let me reevaluate this, and took my mentor's advice and started to think about what was next for me. And corporate communications was. So I landed a role at Brunswick Group, which is a corporate communications and crisis communications firm. And it seemed very odd and off, but the reality was that it helped so much in whatever I'm doing, because not only can I forever be able to put together a communications plan, but a lot of what you're doing in HR, in talent, in diversity, in all of those roles, it is about your positioning internally and externally. Understanding crisis, understanding the business aspect of communication internally and externally. So it was kind of a wild card role, but I think just in general, as a leader, understanding corporate communications in every single role has literally helped me to stay on top of all trends, but also be able to position the kind of work that I'm doing. So they were very, very interesting roles, but more importantly, they set the foundation for the continuous learning and evolving of skills that people typically don't associate with DEI.
My guess is that those different experiences have helped make you such a bigger and more well-rounded leader. And I love you did corporate communication. I think that is a super skill for HR folks to have, because we are always communicating, we're positioning. And if you can't communicate clearly and concisely, you're going to have a problem. So I think that's great to double down on that. Even the age of AI and ChatGPT, Being able to write is never going to stop you from being successful. In fact, it's going to propel you to go faster. The other thing, Libra, as you were talking, that really resonated with me is the fact that you have thought about continuing to reinvent yourself. And I think it's so important for people to think about, how am I continuing to grow and develop and sort of to really kind of shed the skin of your old self to say, I'm going to take on these new behaviors, this new attitude, this new role, and not be confined as I am a diversity expert. I am a talent person. I could be bigger and broader, and to think differently 100%. About yourself is so important that you've done that. And I think that's helped you being so successful in your career. So next you became the global head of diversity and inclusion at PayPal, and then later the chief diversity officer at Twilio. What did both those experiences teach you about championing and implementing change in organizations?
So let me just say this also. One of the other great skills and just learnings from these roles, especially American Express and Brunswick Group, American Express was a global role. And I don't know that people fully understand how important it is when you have a global role that you are connecting to so many different people. But it's just understanding how people work in one part of the world versus another part of the world, how they consume information, how they respond to information, the various HR policies, practices, laws. I literally felt like I went to a global law school to understand how you are managing different labor laws outside of the US. So I think it's important to say that because that was so new to me. And I think that also adds to the complexity of any HR, DEI, or any role at the senior level because it's global. But quickly, Brunswick Group is a British-based corporate communications company. And I was based in the New York office. And typically, most people that are working work and live in the US where they are headquartered. To work for a company that is British-based and to be in the US was a different dynamic because I understood what it's like to not work in HQ or headquarters. I understood what it was like to have very different isms that didn't translate to me. So that also helps with you just understanding kind of this insider-outsider dynamic that most HR people have to deal with all the time and how it feels to actually wake up to all a bunch of news when you're like not on the same time zone, not even the same country. We were dealing with early on Brexit, just understanding those particular laws. So I think that's also super important to say how that contributed to my role at PayPal specifically. PayPal was truly a global company, truly a global company. Not only was this about my role of understanding diversity in every single country, but I also had team members that were based outside of the US and fully understanding their contribution to the work of DEI was something that I had not really to the scale and capacity that I had. And I really, really needed to understand that. PayPal was amazing. It was my first very senior role. This was when diversity and tech were really, really championing this work beyond what was happening on the East Coast. Because a lot of diversity initiatives were already happening, like I said, in the 90s and the early 2000s. Tech blew up in the 2010s, 2015, around that time. And then DEI was huge. A lot of people came out to California, to the West Coast, and to tech companies to drive diversity. And this is the first time I was stepping into a major role, a very, very senior role at PayPal. And it was truly, truly global. One of the things I would say was super important for me was, one, having the opportunity to work directly with the then CEO and advocating for myself in a way that I never did, which was to say, this isn't just me. I need help and support from you. So I didn't report to the CEO at the time, but we scheduled quarterly and sometimes monthly conversations about the direction of PayPal, the impact that diversity was going to have, but also his role in helping to execute that. I had never had that before. So that was super, super important to me, as well as what it meant for every single region. There was data associated, there were expectations associated along with all the various labor laws and the ways that people really define diversity outside of the US in different countries. That was a major initiative for me. In addition to working at a company that grew and scaled so quickly, I think when I was there, at 1 year, I think the company had acquired 2 to 3 companies. So you're not only acquiring companies, but you're also integrating them into your culture and your strategy and your plan. So that was really, really a wonderful opportunity for me to step into a senior role, it be very global, have the impact that I had, but also connecting with the CEO in a way that I'd never done before. Fast forward to Twilio. Twilio was game changing. And fun fact, Twilio, which is a SaaS company headquartered in San Francisco, listed the chief diversity officer role. I think it's important to understand the timeline. January 2020, there was no COVID. January 2020, only people that were related to George Floyd knew George Floyd. They were really ahead of their time. So at the time, the CEO's commitment to this role was very, very different from other companies. So it was the first roles report that I knew of that reported to the CEO. Actually, there was another one, but that reported to the CEO and was part of the executive committee. When I saw that role listed, I knew at the time that diversity was really shifting. And then, of course, we hit COVID in March, George Floyd in May, and then I took on the role in August. And that probably was the most critical moment in my career because it elevated me to that C-suite role, but it also allowed me to work hand in hand with the CEO, not the quarterly conversations, but really have accountability to this work because of my reporting line to the CEO. And because the executive team were committed to this work and they were accountable to this work because it was part of the executive team. And the work that we were able to do at Twilio, to me, we would not have been able to do this work had it, the role been scaled differently. If someone had taken the role a year or two before, I mean, it was all the timing of it, but also just elevated to an executive role so that we can really start to think about how we can make systematic changes.
Hey, everyone. After a quick break, Libra and I will be right back to talk about why chief diversity officers are transitioning to chief people officer roles and a perspective on the current state of diversity, equity, inclusion in 2024 and beyond.
The Institute for the Future recently came out with a report that said 85% of jobs that will exist in 2030 haven't been invented yet. While I can't predict the future, I am certain that the only way to future-proof your career is by learning to learn. This applies to our organizations as well. And as HR leaders, our job is to ensure our team members have the skills and capabilities needed now and in the future. This is why I'm excited to announce the Future of HR podcast is now sponsored by Biz Library. Biz Library is the place where learning happens. They're your one-stop shop for all of your compliance, upskilling needs, and leadership development challenges. Biz Library is an industry leader for high-quality, off-the-shelf content that will solve your compliance needs, support the upskilling of teams, and will help your leaders to lead. If you're looking to elevate learning in your organization, give Biz Library a call as they can support you with their innovative L&D platforms, best-in-class content, and unrivaled strategic support. And if you mention that JP at the Future of HR podcast sent you, you'll receive a 10% discount on year one of your Biz Library contract. So head on over to bizlibrary.com and see how they can help you to elevate learning in your organization today. What a journey you had there from PayPal and then Twilio into now where we're at 2024. I'm kind of curious, Libra, what's your take on the current state of diversity, inclusion, and equity in our organizations today?
That's a loaded question, especially because over the weekend, there was a New York Times article. There have been lots of conversations and commentary around the end of DEI or the pushback and constant scrutiny of DEI and DEI programs in corporate America. Oh, sorry, not even corporate America, everywhere. Education systems everywhere. It's been highly politicized, more so than I've ever seen it. So I will say this, and I think I alluded to this earlier. In 2001, I worked in New York. September 11th happened. The market responded. People lost their jobs. A lot of roles were eliminated. A lot of HR, DEI. It wasn't targeted at DEI. It was like, we need to skim just to make sure that we're managing this possible recession is what they said after September 11th. 2008, you had the crash of the market, financial services. Same thing happened. I was collateral damage. I was part of a DEI team that was eliminated because they needed, again, to trim the fat. I don't know that it was completely targeted at eliminating all DEI roles, JP, but it certainly, a lot of us lost our roles, I lost our jobs. Shortly after that, Barack Obama became president, and I literally heard someone say, Barack Obama's president, we don't need DEI anymore. So there was not a backlash, but it was definitely like, we don't need it, we've overcome. And a lot of people bought into it. And then you had, of course, all the things that happened in between that, a lot more companies jumping on the bandwagon, thinking about it from a business case perspective. It became, companies started to build and scale shortly after 2009, 2010, more and more DEI programs are popping up. And I think that a lot of stakeholders and CEOs really understood the value of DEI. It was still a business case, but I think there was value in it. And it was also attracting the talent that you wanted because we had a new generation of employees in the workplace. Now, I've never seen this. I haven't experienced just such a backlash. It is highly politicized. It is global. People are angry. People are upset. And I'm seeing people who are really driven by fear, make decisions to whether or not they're going to continue with DEI programs, continue having a role dedicated to DEI, or if they do, call it something else. That is essentially what is happening. So I saw an article over the weekend, and there's plenty of articles about a group of individuals that are really pushing to eliminate DEI all over. And we can feel the impact of it. There are those companies. There are those institutions that are like, we get it. We care. We really, really want it here. But for the most part, it's happening. You can see the budgets being cut. You see a lot of great talent leaving the workplace because this is what they decided to do. Not everyone had the mentor that I had that said, hey, you need to think of other things to do to just expand and reinvent yourself in case this happens. And I don't think she even thought that was going to get to this point. But I think a lot of people put a lot of energy and time into this work, especially after George Floyd. Companies are cutting back, they're eliminating, and they're shifting their focus. It is unfortunate. And I do find that a lot of people are really concerned about what that ultimately means in the workplace, short of people losing their jobs, JP, but also, what does this mean for programs? What does this mean for attracting great talent? What does this mean for the bottom line? Someone said for every good thing that they do, it's they make money off of every good deed that they do, meaning every time they make a concerted effort to promote equity at all costs, they see it show up in their revenue. I think a lot of people disassociated that because DEI has become more of a buzzword and a feeling versus a business opportunity, but also a business strategy. And so I think it just becomes a little bit easier for people to detach themselves. So it is unfortunate. I'm hopeful that this isn't a forever situation, but I'm certainly feeling the impacts of it.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Libra. And I think you're right. It's a huge missed opportunity to take steps back on the progress we made in a lot of areas and to miss the fundamental where this came from, which is having an inclusive, equitable organization, right? That's the key. To go the other way, to go against that, to not just do the right thing is unfortunate. And I think you're right. We're seeing a lot of that. And obviously, it sounds like in the marketplace, some companies are eliminating these roles. Some are combining them with HR. What are you seeing there? Are you seeing that kind of they're saying, well, we're going to give this to HR partners now. We're still going to have some commitment. We're just not going to have a chief diversity officer. What are you hearing in that area?
I think it's a combination of things. So some of it is a headcount conversation. It's like, well, we're going to eliminate this head of diversity. We don't need that person. It is a headcount. As companies are actually eliminating roles in general, that's a conversation that people have and they make a decision whether or not they're going to eliminate that headcount. So it becomes a headcount conversation. Then I do think that some of the very basic understanding of what DEI is, which typically does not always mean that it's DEI. So ERGs, for example, I'm seeing a lot of companies say, hey, we're going to eliminate the DEI person, but we're going to give all the work to ERGs, employee resource groups. Employee resource groups do not equal DEI. They're a component of it, but that's not what this is. So you see a lot of companies making those decisions because they want to keep something, but not really understanding what diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, whatever you want to call it, it's all the same. Whatever that is, they don't fully understand that it is promoting equity at all costs, but also dismantling systems that actually have created inequity. And I think that you need someone who has been in the space that understands all components of HR systems, that has a voice, that understands business strategy, that understands decision making, so that decisions that are being made are in favor of all people and all communities and not just one over the other. ERGs are not in a place to do that. So we're seeing a lot of decisions being made like, let's eliminate the headcount. Let's shove everything over to the ERGs, which is completely unfair on so many levels. One, they're not equipped to do it. Two, they don't have the skill set. And three, that's not their jobs. You end up paying the ERGs, which I think is also kind of weird because they have a job. So it's just a really, really strange distribution of roles and of work. I've seen people, to your point earlier, offer some of the work to the HR business partners. Not here to pass judgment, but I will say, not all HR business partners are created equally, nor do they have the full understanding or awareness of the breadth of the work that needs, that you will need in order to drive DEI, which is part of the problems that a lot of DEI people have, especially if they are reporting to a chief people officer or sitting within HR. This assumption that all HR people really understand or behind DEI is kind of false too. Some do, some don't. So I think you're seeing a bit of that. So it gets lost in the shuffle. I see people just getting rid of it altogether. Just like, that's not for us. We can't do it. Apologies. And then there are people that are unapologetic about it. You're always going to have that, those companies that are like, this is who we are. This is basically our brand. This is what our company is built on. So we will forever be committed to this work. It falls into different buckets, but what I am seeing more of is the elimination of certain roles, having someone there without resources, without headcount, which to me, net-net is the same thing as eliminating the role altogether. In other words, more companies are opting into taking a pause, pulling out some of the work that they feel is good enough, and just seeing how this election in the U.S. goes and how people will respond in the next year or two.
Yeah, thank you for walking through that. Some of the things you brought up there, I think, in terms of where each company's at making their investments or dismantling the investments they have made, I really think when you look at the talent market, talent will start to make a decision about where they want to work. And I think people are pretty astute to find out, is this a real commitment or not to equity and inclusion? And I think that'll hopefully, over time, will get us back to a better equilibrium. But another trend that you have been seeing more recently is diversity, equity, inclusion leaders like yourself who are taking, really evolving to chief people officers and CHRO roles. Yeah, tell us more about what you're seeing and some of the critical skills that chief diversity officers are bringing with them as they move into the head of people roles.
Yeah, that's so funny. I want to bring it back to the conversation we had earlier to see my boss and mentor do this in the early 2000s. Not all heads of diversity or chief diversity officers, or whatever level, are created equally. Not all of them have the same skills, but there are a few that I've seen where it's been very, very successful, where the head of diversity either has some HR background, some talent background, or has a very senior role where they have tapped into what it means to actually drive a people strategy and business strategy and combine them. And they are at a place where they can contribute to the HR system in general. I've seen it happen. I see a lot of heads of DEI actually evolving into either heads of talent or chief people officer and CHROs. And the reason why I say this is that most heads of diversity at a senior level are tapping into every single function within HR. It's talent acquisition, it's compensation, it's benefits, it's talent management, performance, it's operations, it's data. Like, learning and development. Oh my goodness, learning and development. Not only you tapped into it, but ultimately, if you've done the role effectively, you have worked partner driven and seen results from your contribution and helping to shape, evolve, drive, or run each component of HR. So it's only natural that if done that correctly, this is a stepping stone into becoming a CHRO. So to me, I used to say a chief diversity officer is basically a CHRO with a focus on driving equity through for all people, but certainly with a focus for marginalized communities globally. And then to me, it's a win-win because not only are you getting a chief people officer that has done every single component versus a lot of, there are some chief people officers that came from TA, that just came from TM, that came from your compensation, but not all of it, unless you've been an HR business partner, which I think is a great pipeline into becoming a chief people officer. But as a DEI professional, you have done all of that with probably globally and with a mindset, making decisions that impact the company in a way that supports great talent that can come different ways, whether it's diversity of thought, whether it's where you're from or whatever groups that typically are marginalized have an opportunity to also benefit from this. And so it's just to me a natural next step. And what I have seen is a very, very good transition and very successful transition of people that I know that have decided that after their chief diversity officer role, they wanted to transition into a chief people officer role. And they are doing exceptionally well because they have hit every single function and component of the HR world, as well as help to influence. And you're certainly partnering with the CEO more than you think if you are a head of diversity. So I'm actually glad to see it. It's also, JP, very interesting to see how the role of chief people officer is also shifting in 2024. You see a lot of people that were currently chief people officers that are like, we're tapped out, we're exhausted, we're tired, or they're looking to do something else, either transition into a COO role. And then you have certainly a great group of talented individuals who are ready to step into chief people officer roles. I'm excited about it. I love shifts and changes, especially for the better. Then also when there is a mix, I think it's great. And I also have to say, and I would love to hear your thoughts about this, the shift in the workplace in 2024, we're actually, what, almost 4 years since the pandemic started, 4 years of every company deciding whether or not they're going to return to office or not, 4 years of a world of very interesting politics and potential wars and people feeling a certain way about the role of the workplace in an individual's life. So I'm just curious how you are seeing the role of the workplace. And I do want to tie it back to the conversation I had earlier about how chief diversity officers, to me, are really in a position to take on these chief people officer roles.
When you think about work, I think people have different expectations than they did 4 years ago, just across the board. And I was just talking to another guest and they've done some research around this. And what shifted is that people are much more focused on finding a role that fits their purpose, where they're growing, where they're connected to the organization. And I think across generations, people are much more looking to be satisfied with the role, like wanting to be happy and willing to take steps back or not invest everything into a company to make sure they've got some work-life balance. And so I think there is a dramatic shift there, which is hard for people to maybe understand a little bit. And then I think there's just more options than there used to be. I think obviously it's full-time, but there are people who are doing creating type things. There are people who are doing side gigs. There's people who are starting their own companies. And I think people see more opportunity. And so some people are getting off that treadmill more often. In the case of chief people officers, I'm not an expert in that area, but I think people are making the same choices, thinking the same way. It's been a hard 4 years for chief people officers in general. I think coming out of COVID, we're finally getting back to maybe a little bit of equilibrium in terms of work and this whole return to office and where we work versus how we work debate.
Yeah.
But we'll see where that goes next. I don't know. It feels like to me that the conversation's sort of done. Most organizations have now kind of set in of how they think about work and whether it's hybrid and remote, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So it's probably time to focus in more on how we can drive collaboration, inclusion, productivity. But what about you? What do you think?
I agree with that. I agree. And I think a lot of people are burnt, especially as that they were driving a significant part of the transformation work and business continuity work from 2020 to 2024, 100%. I do think that there are people that are like, oh, I want to step into a fractional role. I didn't even think that was a thing, but now that is everywhere. You want to be a fractional talent person, a fractional whatever, like a fractional CEO. It's like, those are opportunities now that I find popping up left and right. And I think to your point earlier, it's really just to address some of the, just the work-life integration or balance or whatever word you want to use so that people can tap into their purpose and feel very satisfied and at peace with some of the decisions they're making around their careers, which are very different from their homes. What I will say about the workplace, I agree about the roles, but now I think it's getting back to this year will be very interesting whether people called folks back to the office, whether they're hybrid or whatever. You're right. Everyone's figured that out by now. But then I think it's going to be a redefining and a shift in back to what is the role of the workplace? During the pandemic, I think it became solidified where a lot of companies wanted to help people out and really just become an extension of their homes. They wanted to offer as much support to employees. They wanted to offer as many benefits to employees. People wanted to be more sensitive during COVID. For George Floyd, after all these different rulings and policies and laws that have impacted their people's lives, whether you liked it or not. And I think there was a lot of stress and burden on the workplace, and which is probably why a lot of chief people officers and CHROs are completely burnt out. And so as they've started to shift as to like, where, to your point, how, and what is the role of the workplace? Is it going to shift back to this is a workplace and we end here and your home life begins here? So we'll offer basics, but after that, that's kind of on you. Or will it continue to be a fluid type of situation where you don't know where it ends and begins? And less about the workplace, where they're requiring so many of your hours, but also, oh, great, we're going to offer this to make your life a little bit easier. So it kind of bleeds into it. And I think that also has created a lot of challenges for heads of diversity and heads of HR and other executives, because then you're required to actually send out a statement. My corporate communications background came into handy because I swear every time something happened, we spent hours and hours and hours like, oh, we're going to send out a statement about how you're going to address this with the employees. And I think a lot of companies have decided we're going to go back to this is the workplace. This is what you do. This is what we expect from you. And I think a chief people officer also is driving that work. But also what I think is super important is ensuring that there's an investment back into talent. And as you said earlier, and talent is that's my sweet spot. And that's where I got my experience, talent management, learning and development, the performance part. And I think that that's kind of been neglected at times. And so I believe that there's going to be more of a focus on investing in talent as a way to get people to make different decisions about their employees, but also to ensure that there is higher retention. Because we've seen a lot of ebbs and flows of retention over the past couple of years that I think, to your point earlier, people deciding, hey, I can't do this.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, we'll still continue to see investment. You know, the reality is talent is still really scarce and we're going to need talent. And so I think organizations will continue. It's a little bit of a pendulum that swings each way. And right now we're maybe on the, you know, hey, we're having a little more of, we need to work more with less, right? But the reality is talent is still very, very much relevant and critical and scarce. And I think organizations will have to make the investments to keep their best talent and keep their people. So I think long term, we'll shift back to being much more employee experience and employee focused with that balance. Of course, with economics and trying to make sure we're winning for the business, but I still think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But Libra, last question for you. What's one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR in the next 5 to 10 years?
I do believe that companies at one point thought that people were their biggest assets. And somehow we have kind of gotten away from that or defined it in a way that was a bit more transactional. There wasn't a great deal of focus in terms of investing in your people. And investing in your people so that they can thrive versus hoard. And I think there's a difference. And I think it, your motivation behind it is different. And I think in the next 5 years, there will be an investment into talent, investing into understanding what leadership is, investing in truly evolving leaders. But I also think this is another side conversation. The definition of a leader is going to be vastly different. I actually would rather say that than people as an asset. We saw as quote unquote leaders, as in your CEO, your CFO, I think we saw a prototype. And those were ones that were not necessarily ruthless, but also really, really driving towards profitability. Super critical. We're in a corporation. That's the goal. But it's the how they did it. And I think in the next 5 years, given all the changes that's happening in the world, I think the prototype of a very, very strong leader will certainly start to shift. And I think people will start to focus more on the how versus just the what. I'm hopeful that that is the case. I think that there are more and more leaders that are stepping into these roles. I do think that PE and venture funds are reconsidering who is taking the helm and really thinking about not just their role to profitability, but as a stakeholder, their leadership behaviors are becoming more visible and you can start to see that. And boards are becoming more critical to ensuring the success of these companies and they have a point of view about it. I do think leadership qualities are going to become something that is going to be a focus over the next 5 years.
Libra, thank you so much for joining the Future of HR. It's been an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Libra for sharing her perspectives on the current state of DEI and the future of work. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe, share a podcast with at least one other person, or even better, leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Francisco Sorrento. Francisco is the Chief People Officer at DigitalBridge, which is a leading global alternative asset manager dedicated to investing in digital infrastructure. Francisco is a very forward-looking Chief People Officer, and I know you're going to love this conversation. As we discuss why you should treat employees as customers and deliver on the employee value proposition, why you need to understand the unique contribution of each role in the organization and what he calls a zip code of value, and why HR needs to seize opportunities and redefine its role in the future, and much, much more. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.